At this time, I'm supposed to introduce the speaker. At first, when I started coming in here and was struggling and not ready to quit and drinking and coming back and picking up chips, I would see people come in and change, and it was, in a weird way, it was frustrating because I couldn't get it, and I would see people doing that. But eventually, I was able to get it. You know, the miracle happened, and then I could start to see people in a different light when they get it. And it really is a miracle, and it's one of the great parts of this program is to see these people change. You know, and before I couldn't enjoy it because I was sick, crazy, and I was jealous of people that got it. And now, you know, I just see a miracle. It's a deadly disease. And it is truly a miracle when people recover. And one of these people that I've got to watch come in and get this thing is our speaker tonight, and it's Megan.
Hi, my name is Megan. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 11th, 2009, and that is through the grace of God, the fellowship of AA, all you people in this room, and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh my God, my heart's racing. Okay. I'm really excited to be here, though. This is a great opportunity. I remember coming to Saturday night teacher meetings and seeing people tell their story, and I just tried for that. I was like, oh, I can tell my story. My story's amazing. And then as I got sober, I realized, like, that's too nerve-wracking to actually do sober, but, you know. I was born in San Diego, California, and my mom's from New Jersey, and my dad was from Virginia, and at some point, they both didn't like living on the East Coast and moved out west. They met in a bar. Dad was a bartender, mom was a cocktail waitress, and I think it was about a month they knew each other, and then they were with child, which was me. And about 7 months later, they took off to Vegas and got married by Elvis. So that was the beginning of, you know, a wonderful marriage. I was about 1.5 when they decided to move back out east to New Jersey because my mom really wanted to know me to know my family growing up. We have a crazy Italian family is what I come from. And she grew up with a huge family, big holidays, all the cousins, and she really wanted me to be able to enjoy all that as well. So she moved us out there, and we lived, I don't remember obviously any of this, but I know we lived with my grandmother for a few years while my dad could find a job, and eventually he did, and we moved down to a town called East Windsor, which was central Jersey, kind of the sticks near Pennsylvania, and I'll tell you, my dad's an alcoholic, and the disease eventually did kill him in 2001, so I grew up in an alcoholic household. He drank every day, every morning before work, usually at lunch. You know, what I knew of my father was coming home to him sleeping on the couch because he was too hungover or still drunk from the morning or whatever, losing jobs constantly, getting jobs, moving, never lived in a place longer than maybe 2 or 3 years growing up, and it's all I knew. I mean, I just assumed when I was little, dad's sleeping, mom would always say he has a headache, and then she'd be yelling at him, and she'd be angry and mad at us all the time because she was frustrated, and it was just a really toxic environment, and I don't really remember too much of my childhood. Like, I don't have many great memories until probably, I would say, about sixth grade was when I finally started to, I can talk about some of the behaviors I started to have because of drinking, or because of my dad's alcoholism. We eventually kicked him out. I think I was like 12 when we moved up north Jersey, which was Midland Park. This town was a mile square, so small. Everybody had lived there their whole lives. And he'd gotten a job and another one. And we were living there. And I think he ended up going to rehab at that point because he tried to kill himself. It was his first attempt at that. And I remember when I moved into this town, I was so excited because I could make up all these lies about my life. Because it was the first time that, you know, I realized, like, oh, I can tell people anything I want, and they'll believe it, and they'll like me because of it. So at 12 years old, someone would, you know, you might say, oh, I'm related to the Queen of England, or I have this awesome. No, I started telling people I saw the Challenger blow up. I was there. I witnessed it. Pieces were falling. I told people that I mean, embellished and told stories that just made no sense. And instead of people really liking me, they made fun of me like crazy, and they said, there's no way you could have ever seen that. Did you live in Florida? And I was like, wait, it happened in Florida? And, you know, no clue. And it was so hard. I remember trying so hard to fit in and get that. I wanted to be popular. I wanted people to like me. And I thought telling stories and making up lies. I think I told people I had 18 brothers and sisters, and I rattled off names. And, you know, then they'd come over and say, well, where's your big family? And, you know, they don't exist. And, I mean, it just kind of got me in trouble because people did not, you know, people would just laugh at me and make fun of me. And it was really hard. I remember that year being tough. And eventually we moved after a year in this small town. And we moved to a place called Fairlawn in New Jersey. That's where I ended up going to high school. Man, I remember striving to be popular. I mean, that was just my goal in life, is to get people to like me, no matter what it took. And I made up lies constantly. I told people stories. I tried to make myself feel better because I never fit in. I never felt good, comfortable anywhere. These people had friends going into schools, and I was always a new person that nobody knew. And I was always lying and getting in trouble and just... Oh, man, it's crazy. But anyway, so I had my first drink when I was 13. I'll never forget it because it was actually quite amusing. We had a cool mom friend, you know, a friend who's got a cool mom who lets us drink. And I was 13, and her daughter was 12, and the father would go out or to work. I think he worked nights or something. And, you know, she let us have all our friends over, and she took us to the store, and she bought us a bottle of Jack Daniels. And I remember smelling it and thinking, like, how do you guys drink this? This is so gross. And I took a sip, and it burned everything. I was, that's nasty. And then I took another sip and another sip. Needless to say, within 3 sips of it, I was wasted. So then I started to freak out because I've never been drunk. And I'm like, oh, my, what do I do? And I call my mom and say, okay, I think I'm ready to come home now. So she comes to pick me up, and as I'm walking to the car, I bounce off the side of the house and then continue to walk. So I get in the car, and she looks at me. She's like, you're drunk. No, I'm not. You know, wasted, her 13-year-old daughter. So she got me home, and of course, you know, yelling. And I think a part of her was really freaking out because she saw what the alcoholism was doing to my dad. At this time, he still wasn't living with us. He eventually does come back, but so she got nervous, and that was the only time I drank, pretty much until high school. I mean, I was 7th grade, and then I didn't really touch it again until high school. So it was about 8th grade. My dad, fresh going into high school, my dad came back to live with us, and I'll tell you, my freshman year was the best year of my life. My dad was sober, dry drunk, I should say, but he was happy. I mean, from what I remember, he was a happy guy. And it lasted, you know, as we know, it lasts until it doesn't work anymore. And, you know, I think he tried to fill his void with family and buying us stuff and, you know, hanging out with my friends and just being that cool dad. And, the time came where, you know, he thought it'd be okay to drink again, and he did. And he came home, I was 16, and he came home and he was pretty drunk, and we all yelled at him and told him to get out, and he chased me out of the house. He was a little abusive. I mean, I don't want to over-embellish it, but he, you know, I did have a good handful of times that I got beat up for, you know, antagonizing him because I'd be so mad at him that he was drunk, and I'd be like, why? You know, I'm yelling at him, and he would not like that so much. But so he chased me out of the house, and he, I got in the car, and I remember driving away, and I called my mom, and I said, I can't do it again. I'm like, either he goes or I go. I'm like, I'm not living, you know, anymore with this man because he scared me, you know. He wasn't, it was hard to be around someone like that. So she told him to leave. He left, and I came home. And, so I graduated high school. I did those other party favors in high school, you know, drugs, trying this, trying that. But I never really got too involved in that aspect. It was fun in high school. When I realized I was 18, I'd get arrested for illegal stuff. I thought, okay, I can't do that now. I can't do anything illegal because that's, like, huge to be in jail. And so I remember I got my first waitressing job when I was 17, and... God, that bartender was like the coolest person that I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, I wanted to be that bartender at the restaurant I worked. I thought that was just the job, the most glorious. Everybody loved them. Everybody wanted to be their friend. And that's really all I was looking for, was somebody that everybody wanted to be friends with. That's all I wanted. And so I, 18th birthday to the T, I was like, okay, let me find a bartending job. I walked into the first bar I could find. And I got hired. I was 18, I was tiny, I was dumb, and, you know, people, you know, old man's bar where I had to pour shots and, you know, open beers. I mean, if you asked me to make some kind of drink, I would look at you like you were crazy, but I was so excited for that job. And, yeah, that took me into a 12-year career of bartending. And, but yeah, I was the life of the party. I had 20,000 friends, I guess you could call them, but they were all the customers of the bar. You know, I didn't know anybody else. I didn't really have, like, friends to call and say, hey, you know, let's go out. Like, my life was usually going to the bar that I worked in and having all the friends I knew coming in as well and then sitting down and drinking with them. But it made me feel a part of. I felt a part of, and that's all I wanted. I felt a part of the bars. I felt I could go to other town bars. I mean, I didn't live in a huge town, and everybody knew me. I mean, it just fed my ego. It fed everything I needed to feel good about myself. And, you know, it kept me happy, I guess, for what I knew happiness to be. It kept me happy. Eventually, my dad got sick, and it was the alcoholism as well as, you know, the abusing his body and not taking care of himself, you know, and he got sick, and we got a call. It was 2001, and we got a call that he was in the hospital and that they didn't know he was going to make it overnight, through the night. And they said, well, and I hadn't talked to him in about 4 years, and I was like, well, do we have to come now? Can we come over the weekend? And they were like, yeah, you might want to come down here and, you know, say your goodbyes. So we went there. And he actually pulled through. He lasted about in the hospital 3 months, and they put him in a rehabilitation center, and he got better. And then it was February of 2002, and we got a call that he had just passed away through the night. They don't know why. They say it was respiratory failure, but, you know, we didn't really go into autopsy and stuff. But, I mean, the man drank every day. I'm going to tell you, his alcoholism is really what kept me out of these rooms for 12 years of my drinking career, because, I mean, every time I drank, I blacked out, but I wasn't an alcoholic because I didn't drink every day. You know, I didn't drink when I woke up. I didn't drink, you know, to go to sleep. And, I mean, eventually I did get to the drinking to sleep point, but I didn't do that when I was, you know, I was a bartender. I was a social drinker. I was not like you people at all. And so he passed away. And eventually I got my first DUI at 23. It was Jerry Garcia's birthday. Who doesn't drink on Jerry Garcia's birthday? No, come on. He had died like 8 years ago, but it was a holiday to me, and I celebrated it every year. So we had gone out for happy hour, and that was pretty much what I was known for doing at this point in my life. I'd go out for happy hour. I used to be called, people would call me the happy hour victim when I ended up at like 2 in the morning at the bar, just completely not knowing what's going on. And we were about a block away from where we were going, and I said, I can drive. I slug a beer, put it down, got in the car right in front of a cop. So the cop decided to pull me over, which apparently makes sense when you drink and then, you know, get into a car to drive. And, you know, did the whole spiel sobriety, and of course I failed it. I wasn't blacked out at this point. I actually remember it was quite amusing. I kicked off my flip-flops because I told him that's why I couldn't walk the line. I did tell him that he was yelling at me, and I told him he had a small penis. That was in the police report, so, I mean, it kind of happened. And I had to go to court and the whole nine, and I had to apologize to the cop, which was, you know, totally humiliating, but I apologized to the cop, and the next day after the DUI, I went out and got hammered. I went away for the weekend, and I remember just drinking and thinking, everybody gets a DUI once. I mean, all my friends had DUIs. All my friends were bartenders and waitresses. Every single one of them had a DUI. They actually welcomed me to the DUI club, so, like, I was excited about it. I'm like, you know. So, eventually I got my license back in New Jersey. You lose your license for 6 months, and I used to take a cab. I was bartending at this Irish pub that I loved working at because it was like I was the only girl and I had all the attention from everybody in the bar that worked there and I the customers, and I loved it. I mean, that was just like the highlight of my years, was this little tiny Irish bar, and it was just cool to, oh, it's the girl that works at Lanigan's, that's the girl, and everybody, you feel like a celebrity almost. I mean, I really did. I felt like I was the most important person because I was a bartender and everybody knew me and liked me for whatever reason. I mean, they liked me when they got drunk, but they know, I don't know if they would have liked me in like I couldn't go to them and have a conversation like I would, you know, these people in these rooms now, you know, they knew nothing of my life. I don't even think they knew my last name, but anyway, it was, you know, it was amazing. And so that lasted, and I kept drinking, and, you know, a couple of people would say here, my mom mostly would just say, you know, you kind of have a drinking problem, and, mom, you know, I don't drink every day. I drink once a week, maybe twice, and, you know, I don't drive anymore when I drink, which is a total lie. I mean, I was constantly lying, and more to me, myself, than anybody, you know, just trying to prove that I was not an alcoholic because I was not like my dad. I mean, that's all I knew. I was not like my dad. I did not need alcohol to function. I was a social drinker. It was just to, you know, what else am I going to do? I'm 25 years old. Eventually, I got a job working for a company called LA Weight Loss. And LA Weight Loss is, I don't know if you guys know, it's a weight loss company, kind of like Weight Watchers. And it was a cool job. They were paying me a lot of money to do nothing. I mean, a lot of money. And I would just delegate stuff. And, you know, we had a girl that, I remember a girl that worked there that would come in stinking like booze, and I had to write her up. And it's just like, that's, I don't know how they don't know. Well, I was the boss, so they really couldn't write me up. But it was weird writing somebody up who, you know, had stunk like booze the next day. And it just, I don't know, that stuck in my head. But anyway, so I was working for LA Weight Loss. I was running Manhattan and Brooklyn. So I was in the city, and I was making really good money. Wasn't bartending at the time because I couldn't do both. And they decided I was doing such a good job that they were going to promote me and move me to Florida. Now, at this point in Jersey, I didn't have any friends. I pissed them all off. You know, I had left them in bars. I had, left them for hot guys. I had, you know, just, I was ditching friends like crazy. You know, it was all about me, and I was super selfish, and I really had no friends. So the idea to move was made within 5 seconds. Really? Come to Florida? Sounds good. I know nobody here. I can start my life all over again, and it'll be awesome. So within a month, I moved down to Florida to Altamont Springs, and I met a girl who worked for me. She's the only girl I knew in Florida, and we go out all the time. Every weekend, it was downtown Orlando drinking, and just on the weekends, you know, come home maybe after working a, you know, crazy night, have a couple drinks, but nothing, you know, every time I drank, I blacked out, but it was progressing. It wasn't to the point where it was when I came in here, but it was slowly progressing. I mean, it wasn't so much going home and having a glass of wine. It was starting to get where I'd go home and drink about a 12-pack of beer to sleep. You know, and I was lonely, had no family at this point, and one friend who, she was ready to kill me by the end of knowing me for a few months as well. We'd gone out downtown, and this was the first time someone actually said, you know, besides my mom, who I thought knew nothing, you might need to think about going to AA, you might have a drinking problem. We'd gone out, and it was coming, this was at the place where I was drinking every night, and I was blacking out, and I had LA Weight Loss, sorry, I'm going to back up. LA Weight Loss had filed bankruptcy 3 months after they moved me here, so I lost that job, making a ton of money in this huge condo, which I was not happy the whole time, but they filed bankruptcy and closed the door, so I had to find a job. So at this point, I'm like, well, I'm not doing corporate work anymore. That was terrible. I'm never going to have to be responsible for people and companies, and that's too stressed. So, of course, I found my way back into bartending because I could drink, I could work, and I could not have any kind of responsibility, and that job sounded ideal to me. So I got a job bartending downtown Orlando, talked to waitressing bartending, and again, I started to feel a part of. I had all these bartender friends, I knew everybody downtown, and my drinking just escalated. I mean, it just got real bad real quick once I got that job. Every time I drank, I blacked out. I'd wake up in bathrooms of bars. I was waking up on floors or in cars. People were trying to get me out of the car. I mean, there was not one time when I would drink downtown that I could stop, that I could just maintain a buzz. And I would try every time, and it would never happen. It would always be blacked out, and I'd have to be taken home. The boss of the bar eventually couldn't take that anymore because she had enough of hearing all the stories about me from other friends that she knew that owned bars, and because I'd go out with our bar shirt on and, you know, make a fool out of myself in front of a ton of people. And so she was ready to fire me. She just said, you drink too much, you cause trouble, you're walking out on tabs, you're fighting with bartenders that I've known for 20 years. I mean, I was just out of control. So she told me, you know, I don't know if I can do this anymore. We're going to suspend you for... Oh, no, I'm sorry, back up. Before she sat down and talked to me, I actually left work at 4 in the morning and I got my second DUI. That was how it all started. I got my second DUI. And that's when she said, okay, you worked in my place and got drunk enough to get a DUI. And that's not okay. And so she sat me down and talked to me and said, you know, something's got to change. And I said, okay, I'll go to AA, because that makes sense, you know. Appease people, go to AA, you know, appeasing my mom, my family, and my friends by, you know, going to AA. So I went, started coming here for about 4 months. And I tell you what, I was coming here because I really had a list of things I needed you people to change in me or change around me to make me not drink so much. I needed to date one of you because that would have worked. I needed to hang out with you guys because you don't drink, so obviously I'm not going to drink if I hang out with people who don't drink. I mean, that makes sense, right? And I had to not go out to bars, and obviously I wouldn't drink if I'm not in bars to drink. So that was my goal for the first 4 months, was just to make as many friends as I could and, you know, find that people, places, and things to change, I guess, you know? And, it worked for about 4 months, and then I decided that I wasn't like you guys because I still was convinced that my dad was the alcoholic type and I wasn't. And I eventually went back out and I drank on a Sunday. Never forget. I drank two drinks at a party. Went to Halloween Horror Nights and I had one drink and a soda. And I was like, look at that. I can have three drinks and I'm okay. I'm not freaking out. I'm not going to lie. It sucked. I wanted to keep drinking. I was not happy that I couldn't drink. But I intentionally drove so I wouldn't drink, and that was my mentality. Monday, I had three glasses of wine with a friend after a movie. She wanted to go home. Again, I remember thinking, God, how does she want to go home? It's only three glasses of wine. It's 8:30. I'm back. Come on. Drink with me. It didn't, you know, she wanted to leave. She took me home. And I had this AA thing in my head. You know, I remember hearing the chasing and reading, the chasing of the buzz, the getting annoyed when you stop. I forget where that reading is, but just trying to drink and then stop and being happy about it. And I was not happy about it. By Wednesday, I was telling the bartender to make my drink stronger. They weren't strong enough. But I wasn't around people who knew me, so I was okay. No one would know I was so drunk. I think Friday and Saturday, I had a couple drinks. I was still bartending. And by Sunday, I was blacked out and getting cut off at the bar that I worked in because I was trying to pour myself drinks while on the bar, evidently. I don't remember any of it. And the bartender, you know, cut me off. She said, you're done. And I came back in here Monday, called my sponsor, begged her, you know, said, I'm ready. I'll do whatever it takes. I can't do it anymore. You're right. I'm an alcoholic. I believe it now. I believe that I cannot function and socialize without alcohol. I'm not happy when I have to stop drinking. I get that heart racing, excited feeling when I know I'm going to start drinking, and that's not normal. Like, that for me, that's not normal for people to do. I mean, I was talking to a normal person once about that, and they're like, you get excited when you get to go drink? And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's like, it's so... I guess we are kind of normal. Sorry if I'm offending people with the norm. I don't feel normal. I do with you guys, but okay, I'll start. Sorry. I called my sponsor that Monday and I said, I'm ready. Let's do this. Let's do the steps. And I talked to my boss at the bar. I swear this time it's for real. I'm really going to do it. I'm really not going to drink. And, you know, she wasn't like, okay, Meg, that's awesome. She was like, all right, whatever. You know, like she was so disappointed and so, I mean, she's a good lady and she was so upset. And by Thursday, I told off a customer and got fired. I got kicked out of my house because this is not the drinking that caused all this. This is me. This is my behaviors now. I was sober and I told off a customer. I was just miserable. If I could not drink, I was not happy and I did not know how to be happy. And that's all I wanted. And so I got fired and I see that now. It was God intervening in my life saying, you know, you need to focus on sobriety and get out of the bars because it's just not going to work in your world right now. And you know, getting kicked out of the crazy roommate's house, you know, that made sense too. And you know, I know I was crazy too. But he's really crazy. Anyway, getting kicked out of there, and then there was one, I don't know, there's something else. Oh, I got a job the same day I got fired from the bar. I mean, that was God working in my life too, because he was like, well, we can't let you go without, so here, we'll give you this office job that'll keep you occupied, which is amazing. I saw that job today, a year later. And so yeah, I came in, I told my sponsor, I said, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. Let's do it. I'm admitting I am powerless over alcohol. I cannot drink like a normal person. Even if I could for a day or two, it led me right back to the insanity every time. My life wasn't manageable. I mean, I couldn't manage my own life. I mean, I was telling off customers. At this point, I had no friends left. I had none in Florida. Zero. I had nobody. I didn't talk to anybody but my sponsor and my mom for like the first month of sobriety. I was scared to talk to people. You know, this crazy bartender who had 20,000 friends. Man, I could not talk to people sober. I was nervous. And I just didn't think anyone was going to like me if I didn't have the alcohol to pour you. I mean, I didn't like myself. I was not a good person. I was selfish. I was self-centered. I could care less who I hurt and what I did. And I was a mess. You took the alcohol away, and for a month, I could not even leave my house. I couldn't do anything but hide in my room and eat cheeseburgers, because evidently that was what made me feel better. I spent a lot of money at McDonald's that month, I tell you. And for some reason, I had to hide doing it. Like, I couldn't eat them in public. It had to be hidden. It was just like this weird, crazy thing I did for like a month. But, you know, the only thing that was making me feel happy and full, and, you know, and yeah, well, I'd eat like six of them. I mean, it was crazy. Anyway. When I started working with the sponsor, she she had me make a power list, an unmanageability list, and there was another one that I don't remember. Oh, a God list. When you saw God in your life. And I was like, you know, God, who's God? What is God? Is that even something that, you know, is going to keep me sober? You know, I'm just not going into the bars. That's how I'm going to stay sober, you know. I'm out of the bars and I'll be okay. And you know, she's like, we'll keep doing the steps. You know, we did the third step prayer, which I absolutely love today. God started working in my life. I didn't do anything to have him start, I did the steps, but he just started appearing in like every little thing. I mean, it was, there'd be times I'd have like $2 in my bank account and I don't know how I'm going to pay. And, you know, something would come up, something would happen. And it was just, you know, my car would break down and it'd be under warranty. And it was, you know, just random little things. And I had friends around me now who would tell me, you know, that's God, right? That's God. God's doing this for you. God's doing this for you. And I started to believe it. I thought I just had bad luck when all this bad crap kept happening to me. And then all of a sudden I get sober and I start doing the right thing and learning how to be a good person. And good things started happening. You know, amazing things started happening. I have friends today that I can call when I'm having a bad day. I have a God I can rely on. I mean, unconditionally, I practice that daily because, you know, he takes care of me. You know, I don't have that hole in my soul I have when I first started coming here, and I really wanted sobriety because, you know, the thought of really not drinking scared me because I just didn't know how I was ever going to be happy without alcohol. And, no, I learned it. I learned it by coming to meetings. I did the greeting at the door for, you know, the first 90 days, and I strive to chair a meeting. I was so excited to chair a meeting. And I got to chair a Saturday noon meeting, which is the one meeting here I never missed. And I'll tell you, chairing that meeting, I got introduced to so many people. I mean, my 3 months of sobriety, I swear, I didn't have a weekend free. We were constantly doing stuff, bowling and karaoke and just all sorts of goofy stuff that I never thought I could do sober. I didn't think it would be fun. I thought I'd be scared and, you know, and how do you do this without drinking? How do you go to a concert without drinking? How do you do anything without drinking? But you know what? I've had more fun in the last year sober and remembering things I've done than I've ever experienced in my life. I mean, I had a list I had looked at before I came in here that I'd written 10 goals I want in my life, you know, 10 things I'd like to, this is, I wrote this maybe, you know, a week when I come back in, and it was like, go back to school, get married, have children, be in a normal relationship. I didn't know normal relationships. I knew drunk relationships. I mean, I don't think I dated anybody that wasn't in the industry of bartending, you know, ever. And boy, bartenders are kind of hoary, so, for the most part, but, get married, have kids, it was be happy, it was, you know, just, there's a bunch of things on there, you know, today I'm in a healthy relationship, today I'm in school for nursing, you know, today I'm happy, today I'm, you know, I strive every day to be the best person I can be with God's help. And he does. He helps me. And, you know, it's not so much just helping alcoholics as much as it is just helping people. You know, God puts things in front of me every day. And, you know, if I choose to do them, you know, do his will, not mine, my days go pretty good. You know, when I try to do my thing and what I want to do and screw all the God stuff, you know, my days don't go so good at all. And I've learned that by coming here, you know, and it's, you know, for anybody that's new, God is a scary person when you first come in. At least he was for me, you know. I didn't understand how he was going to work in my life, but he did. I mean, he gave me all those goals that I had set up, you know, but I get that stuff by doing this stuff. I mean, and if I can, and I have to continue to do this stuff. This is not something I love. The girl at work who said, "Did you graduate AA yet?" And I'm like, you know, I wish. I'm like, it's not something that you graduate, unfortunately. It's something that I'm going to have to do forever. But, you know, I love it. I mean, I love coming to meetings. And I remember coming in the beginning and just forcing myself to come because I was looking for a boyfriend, and it was kind of, you know, had to come a lot to find one. And, you know, but I remember just not thinking that this was like not fun for me to come here. You know, I didn't enjoy it. You know, today I enjoy it. I look forward to seeing my friends. I look forward to hearing God speak through you. That's what he does. You know, God speaks through everything. He speaks through trees to me. He speaks through, we have wind chimes now at this new house we moved into, which are amazing. And he speaks through me there. I mean, it's just, it's so cool. Anywhere you look, there's God everywhere, you know. And, yeah, he's changed my life. He's changed me. I could never do this unless I had a dream that I was drinking while I was speaking Monday night. And that would have been normally, well, yeah. But I did dream that, you know, and it was kind of, you know, it was scary. And I would never have done that if I was still drinking, you know. I wouldn't be able to have the amazing life I have today and the amazing friends I have today. So if you're new, do the deal. Get a sponsor who has a sponsor. Work the steps. God will speak to you. He'll change you because all these people in this room right now looking at me, they wouldn't still be here if God didn't change them. So I'm really glad to have spoken. Thank you.